Hey, welcome to the pregame show, guys. Bear with me. I am actually writing out the topics in the ticker for tonight's show. And give me a second here. Also, Greg's with us today.
Hi.
Nets. Now, wizard. So, while I got this time, I saw Power Rangers.
Me too.
Yeah, I have thoughts about that movie. I will say part of it for the podcast, the other podcast we do.
Right.
But it's.
Well, let me. Your 6-second review had me very curious because I didn't agree with your sentiment. Primarily, your one about not enough character development. When I thought that there was either A, too much character development, or like just pushing too much character development. Now, why did you think there was too much or not enough character development?
So going back and thinking about it, there was, and it was just more of a, like a gut reaction after watching the movie. It's just like, oh, there wasn't enough, but there was a decent amount. I think some of the decisions they made with some of the characters were questionable. I mean, every time, "Hey, I'm the crazy guy," like 5 times in a row in the movie. But like, aside from that, there was a decent amount of character development. I think that I would wish to see much more deeper with like Yellow Ranger and the Black Ranger outside of just like,
Okay.
yeah.
So not enough character development on certain characters.
Yeah.
I guess I can give you that. I think Black Ranger, there's not a whole lot to work there with. I think that Zach, with what he was doing in his life, it wasn't important to know anymore. We just knew that kind of like he liked to do stuff that distracted him from what was going on at home. And then Trini, we had a pretty strong moment. But that moment, by the way, like was probably the moment in the film I didn't like, I liked the least. Because the campfire scene was just so overly
Yeah.
melodramatic.
Not yeah, and there were some shots in that movie where like the camera would like shake, and I get that that's kind of a thing with some films, but it was just I really wanted whoever was filming that shot just like just please put the camera still so I can see what who's talking or what's going on. That's a
What scenes are you talking about?
So within the campfire, there are a few times where like the camera would be going from one person to the next, and sometimes it would be still, and sometimes it would be shaky. It wasn't consistent. I was like, it kind of got to me. It's like, ah, please keep it still. Keep it still.
I don't. I guess I'm like kind of having that huh moment because I don't remember too many of there are too many moments in the film that did that for me. In the action bits when they're like fighting the putties in the pit, 100%. But for scenes like the campfire, I don't remember it getting shaky.
I think for me it just stood out more because I also do video work, and it's like for me it's like ah, it's like I see that, and it's like
It looked like what the campfire scene and other scenes like it looked like to me was they were trying to make it look more home movie-esque.
yeah.
And it wasn't shaky, it just kind of looked like a little like it wasn't steady.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, that didn't bother me because I feel like the way that the camera was moving was intended to make it feel more grounded and less static, like when they're talking to Zordon or something like that. One thing for me about the film that I thought was very interesting, there were a couple moments, very few though, just like I think two, maybe three, where the CGI did not hold up.
You could tell this movie was very budgety. Like,
Oh, absolutely.
there were definitely some scenes where it's like, oh, they didn't have enough money for this scene. That makes perfect sense.
It's not bad, it's just definitely like, was there a reason that the ropes needed to glow green? We understood she had control of them.
Yeah, I mean, did it make any sense to why Well, I shouldn't say anything. I wanted to get into one part, but I was like, I might be getting a bit too deep into it. There were definitely
Are we doing Power Rangers for the movie podcast?
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Yeah. I was gonna ask you, we're gonna do it on same time like last week on Tuesday, 8 p.m.
We can do it Tuesday at 8 p.m.
Cool. Yeah, I'll bring in Derek.
I don't know who else we get.
yeah, Derek is a huge Super Sentai like Power Rangers fan, so he knows more about.
Am I gonna have to tell him to relax and that it's an adaptation and not to, you know, do that whole, like, because I absolutely despise that. Like, that is the worst thing to me. You can compare. You can say, like, oh, fun fact, yada, 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 is then yada, yada, yada. But, like, when somebody says the movie sucked because of the comparison, that drives me nuts.
I was going to say, me and Derek had a conversation after the movie ended, just to kind of talk about it. And he kind of falls in line with me in regards to some of the stuff I saw, what could have been done better. He's a huge fan, but he can see the movie for his flaws. So,
no, what I mean is, like last week, and not to kind of call anybody out because I'm not trying to do that, but one of the people in our podcast last week or last Tuesday when we were doing Logan, mm-hmm. We were discussing problems with the story. Situations that we saw we didn't really like. And when you had pointed them out, you were like, yeah, I just felt like they dwelled too long on this, or they maybe took too much time with this, or something in that regard. And one of the other people was just like, I feel like that they changed how the comic book said it, or like something in that regard. Or like, it's, you know, it's this way. Like, adding in comic knowledge to the extent of like saying, well, it's wrong because they didn't do this, and that's why it's bad, is a wrong opinion to have in my mind. So, like, I don't want you, or did you say his name was Derek?
Oh, yeah, Derek, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want you or Derek to say, like, well, what I didn't like about it was that the Power Rangers were named after the characters from the original series, but they weren't the same skin color, so I didn't like it. I don't want that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Not that you would do that. That's just an example of what I'm talking about.
I mean, like, the Power Rangers, like, if we're talking about story-wise, like, if we're going to go off of what the TV show gave you, it was very vague. Like, you didn't really know the backstory of some of the characters in the show as much as this movie kind of delved into creating that backstory for some of these other characters that are Power Rangers. And you didn't get that in the show. So, like, they had a lot of open room to work with. So, I'll get into it for sure in the podcast.
I feel like the point I'm trying to make is not coming across as right. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out a good way to.
I get what you're saying. Like, you know, don't try to mix in, like, you know, what you
don't say the movie's bad because it's not like the original is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, yeah.
Or that well, everything was great except for the Black Ranger Zord because it wasn't a woolly mammoth. It's like, that's not the point. Who cares? Like, I don't want that argument. I don't want that conversation. Because to me, and we've talked about this before, like, an adaptation does not in any way, shape, or form have to be like the original.
Right. And to kind of in the conversation last week, like, said person we're talking about, I go to him when it comes to everything comic knowledge and movie knowledge, entertainment knowledge. Tends to, that's his shtick. That's his thing on his podcast, and he knows much more of that than I would ever know in my life. So when it comes to
That's awesome. Like, I love, like I said, like I asked, I don't remember who it was, but I was like, what is X-23's origin in the comic? Because I don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would that story have worked better in Logan, or did they go with a good origin story for her in the movie? That's a conversation to have, and that's not a problem. But to sit there and straight up say, like, they didn't use her origin in the movie, so it sucked, is, like, the opinion I don't want to hear. That's the type of opinion I used to have whenever I'd go see, like, any kind of superhero movie. If it wasn't, like, panel for panel, I hated it. And that's not good.
I mean, I was going to say, like, maybe I tuned it out, or because I didn't quite hear that from him. Maybe I go back and listen to the podcast. But if he did, if that was true, then you know, yeah, you're right. But.
No, there was subtle conversation during the Logan podcast about how, like, there was argument about, like, when we talked about his death.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. We discussed how, like, they were like, oh, the animanium of biodegrading that long, da da da. And then they started bringing in information from the comics. And I wanted to point out that, fuck that. Because none of that matters in the movie. Like, you can't bring your comic knowledge into the film to make a point, an opinion about the film. That doesn't work. Like, it works if you say, hey, in the comics, this isn't a thing. So it wouldn't have worked in the movie if they used the comic rules, but that's not the case. That sentence is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But when I want Derek to understand that the adaptation does not have to be like the original. I don't want the same conversation I had to have last week.
Well, I'm pretty sure like Derek knows, like he knows another person that would know more about Super Sentai and Power Rangers more than I would know. But he, you know, we had a conversation after the movie was over, and you know, he's basically like, outlines my thoughts with his, and it's like, yeah.
I like the old adage of judge the content for the content, not for what it's based off of, you know.
Even though it's based off of it.
Oh, it doesn't matter. If you judge the content based on what it's based on, that's not good judgment. That's like Anthony, somebody drawing a picture of Steven as an adult and you going, well, that didn't happen in the show, so fuck that art. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. I mean, like, because I'm thinking, like, if it... I mean, like, there are certain situations where, like, you know, if... Like, it, like... If you're making something that is not exactly the thing that from, you know, say I created an RP, say I created Samurai Jack. Say I created Samurai Jack, like, back in the day, and I make a new Samurai Jack now, like, there is going to be comparisons, there's going to be precedent, and people will still judge it on its own merit, for sure. But the comparisons are always going to be there, regardless.
Discussing comparisons is fine. Judging on comparisons is wrong. That's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
That's us going like, oh, like, well, the original Power Rangers, like, this and this and this, and Zordon was, you know, it's never revealed if Zordon was a Power Ranger, that Rita, we definitely know, wasn't a Power Ranger in the original show, so that's different. That's fine. But if you go, oh, God, and Zordon wasn't a Power Ranger, and neither was Rita, and that's fucking stupid. Like, that's different. You see where the differences come in there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, again, every movie or everything, whatever topic it is different. And in the situation for Power Rangers, like, Power Rangers, it's like, they're freely... you could be really creative in the areas that Power Rangers have because they didn't really delve deep into it, like, in the show, that you could in the movie. So, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for the sake of this film, it's also an origin story, which is, again, the reboot / remake / adaptation, whatever you want to call it. I think also the filmmakers know that they have to, with this, and I'll say this in the other podcast as well, they definitely had to know that their audience was going to be a little niche, much like Ghost in the Shell will be, yeah. Much like Logan will be.
Yeah, yeah.
But they didn't. They also wanted to make it for the crowd that doesn't know Power Rangers, and probably wouldn't watch something as campy as what was on and still is on today. They would probably want to watch something with, like, more substance and a little less camp. And this movie was like, how do we make that balance?
Yeah.
And I think they did an excellent job with that balance. Because there is camp. There's plenty of camp in that movie.
Yeah, there is.
It's outweighed by its storytelling. and its character building. So, but we'll get into that on Tuesday.
Yep. So if you guys are liking the movie podcast talk, we have a podcast, a new podcast we do on our Facebook. So click on the link below and to our Facebook, and you'll be notified when we go live. Anyways, all right, I'm going to pause this music. Gonna get the show started and... Hello, everybody. Welcome to Mission Star Podcast, episode 153. We made 153 episodes of this show. I just realized that.
Jeez, man.
I know.
When did I come on? Like, episode, what, 10?
I don't remember. I don't recall. It's been so long. I want to say maybe it was episode 10. Maybe later on than that, or earlier. The funny thing about the show is, like, it was on and off for quite a while. Because, like, it was originally me and, like, two of my friends. And it was like every month, once a month.
Like, yeah, I remember you had me on as a guest quite often when I was with the other group. And it was like every couple of months you'd have me on. And when I became a full-time person for full-time-ish for Mission Start, like I became a regular on the podcast and then it just became you and me. And we've been doing this for like, God, 2.5 years now.
That's kind of crazy to think about. We've been doing this podcast, like, to get the two of us for a majority of it. It's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah.
I got to go back and see when our anniversary is. I actually have not really looked into that. But anyways, enough talking about the past and me being old. Welcome to our podcast. We talk about games on this show. We talk about the biggest news in the game industry in the past week. We've also been added in a new thing, kind of classic Mission Star podcast, in a sense that we have a topic we discuss on the second half of the show. But the first half is all news, you know, other stuff. And let's get right into it. So, speaking of the past.
I swear, before you continue, I thought you were going to pull a Keemstar and be like, let's get right into it. I was like, no, you stop it.
No, I'm not that quick-witted to do that. Speaking
Thank God,
of,
on that note.
Speaking of the past, as we're talking about the past. Battle.net is no longer Battle.net. Now is officially Blizzard. Blizzard did announce, like a week or two ago, that they're changing their app their new multiplayer platform basically to just Battle. To Blizzard. Sorry, instead of Battle.net. Which is the end of that name, but for a lot of us who played the game, or, you know, previous games like StarCraft 1, or World of Warcraft 3, like, we always went on Battle.net to go log in and play, StarCraft, and, yeah, it's not really much of a big deal, but in a sense, it is for some people for the sake of, like, you know, just... the name recognition, like, no longer going to be there. Now it's going to be changed to another name. Still the same thing, but just, like, now it's a different name. But it just kind of... That name does hold some resemblance to people who have played multiplayer games on Blizzard's servers for StarCraft and other older games for quite a while. And some do, actually, to this day. So it's kind of crazy to see the fact that it's changing the tide to a new Blizzard, per se. That's happening, and I believe that is happening now, actually, so.
Yeah, I believe it's changed, like, this week. I don't know if it's today or, like, a couple days ago or whatever, but it's actually a really smart idea, because, from what I understand, and again, it could be wrong, Blizzard gained a ton of new people through Overwatch.
Yeah.
Because that game, like, every other Blizzard game, like World of Warcraft can definitely be inclusive, but Overwatch is very inclusive. It's easy accessible. When I say accessible, I mean, like, it's easy to play, easy to understand, difficult to master. But the other Blizzard games aren't. Mm-hmm. So it made sense to a point that people using it would, go Blizzard. Like, what? Like, how do I communicate to people? Do I go to a Blizzard website? So, like, it just cuts out the rigmarole. So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And that brand apparently has been around for nearly 20 years, the Battle.net brand. So that's
it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. It's definitely crazy. But it'll definitely work out, I think, for them in the end.
I think it will. I think it's a smart move.
It
does, like, just kind of thinking about it way back then, as far as, like, how it was back in the old dial-up days where I tried to play StarCraft on dial-up on AOL.com. Jesus. And playing on my dad's laptop. Yeah.
I remember one of my first Blizzard experiences was Diablo 2 at a buddy's house.
Yeah. Oh, God. So much fun with that. Yeah. Did you go online with Diablo 2, or did you?
No, we beat the campaign, and then, when I say we, he beat the campaign, and I watched him do it. He had, like, read in, like, GamePro or something to that effect that you could... you could create a portal to go to a cow level.
Oh, yeah, the infinite cow level. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For like 2 straight weeks, that's all we did. We tried to beat the cow level. Learning very shortly you can't, so.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It will be missed, but like all things must change. So, going on to our next story. This is a game that you... specifically like a lot, I should say.
Okay.
And this is a game that I gave it a chance, and I kind of fell off of it because of certain things. But this is from VG247, written by... Give me a second here as I find the editor. Sheriff Shed. Sharif Sayed. I'm going to just continue butchering names when I keep doing this podcast. title, Leaked Destiny 2 Poster Reveals September Release Date Pre-Launch Beta. League Destiny 2 posters and artwork have popped up online, revealing a September 8 release date. The poster, said to have leaked from GameStop Italy, was posted on NeoGAF. It mentions that its release date at the top, as well as the confirmed beta, will take place in June. The full sentence is cut off, but it probably refers to the beta as a pre-order bonus. Either that or pre-ordering gets you the early access to the beta first on PS4. And I'll put the link in the chat for everyone to read the whole article. So... not surprised the fact there's going to be a Destiny 2 going to be happening. And more than likely, it was probably going to be supposed to be revealed at E3. But, with information and leaks nowadays, it's kind of hard to do that. But here's what I'll say.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. For those who don't know, I played Destiny for like a week and a half straight. Got into level 20. I stopped playing. Hearing about Destiny 2, you know what? I'm actually going to give the game a chance. Like, the times I had fun with the game, it was fun. The shooting was great. There were definitely some combat situations where it made a lot of fun between an AI or between me and another person. But I'm actually down to play Destiny 2. I'm willing to try this out. So,
I have a tentative relationship with that game because, as we all know, Activision fucked up the game. Like, we all know that Activision came in, ripped it apart, and said, this is how you're releasing the game. And a lot of people left because of it. The head writer, Marty O'Donnell, a lot of people left because they thought this was a bad way to sell the game. Mm-hmm. And I completely agree. I think... the way the game is right now is more, if you ask me, is how it should have been released day one.
Yeah.
The biggest problem with the game that I have right now is the game's been out for... It'll be out for two... it hit 2 years. Mm-hmm. It hit 2 years last year. Mm-hmm. And I played it for a month after it came out. Because a 6-hour campaign is not enough. But it's not just that there was a 6-hour campaign that sucked. There was, I realized my arms are on my table here. That's why I moved them down, because my camera's just like, go. I'm in like a Star Trek earthquake. It's not that a six-hour campaign isn't enough, because a six-hour campaign is totally enough. The problem is that the game never told you anything. Any of the characters that you met wouldn't tell you any storylines. You didn't learn anything. You had to dive deeper into the the card system that they have. I don't remember, but it was on a different site.
Right. You had to actually read the deeper lore on a website. Mm-hmm. Not in the game. I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
The lore of Destiny is fantastic. It just wasn't in the game.
Yeah.
And then the post-game stuff was so boring. Three strikes that take a half an hour apiece, mm-hmm. That's not enough. Mm-hmm. Like, what makes a multiplayer game last a long time?
It's a replay value, like, whatever it may
be. It's replayability. Okay, so, like, let's take a Call of Duty, a Battlefield, Overwatch, Battlefront, for crying out loud.
Right.
They each have over 10 maps, right off the bat. Each game can take up to 10 minutes, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the next map, and you do it all over again. Now, if you play for about an hour, if you play for 2 hours, the chances of you playing the same map over are pretty low, just because of the rotation and how often that map will pop up. Mm-hmm. So it kind of keeps the game fresh. Every day you don't know what map you're getting, but with Destiny, it was three. That's it.
Yeah, there were so many good ideas in Destiny, I feel like just was not executed right. Like, I love the fact there's like some daily event happening, and you may be out in the world doing your own mission, and it happens right in front of you, and you go chase that objective with other people joining in. Like, that was cool.
The problem with the daily events, though, is that they would pop up as like regular missions.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have like, there's nothing worse than in an RPG when you have a mission and there's no way of knowing exactly how to do it.
Yeah.
There's no direction.
Yeah, there were some great ideas in Destiny, and there were some good things that worked, but there was a lot of things that they did wrong as well.
From what I've been reading from people who were working on Destiny, from just insiders in general, Destiny 2 will be what Destiny 1 should have been. So I'm actually looking forward to Destiny 2 a lot.
Same here. If they can pull off what they initially wanted to in Destiny, I would be really excited. Because I was really excited when Destiny came out, because I was just looking at the trailers and what they're talking about. I was like, man, this is awesome. So many good ideas. And, you know, just have it fall flat.
Yeah.
This is
But
we'll see.
Very disappointing.
We'll see. I may pre-order. I don't know. I'm gonna hold on. I'm gonna hold on. Hold off, I should say, to see what they say. But we'll definitely keep an eye on it. All right. So going on to our next story. So, Greg, you've been a huge proponent in defending microtransactions.
Yes.
So
it also depends on the situation. Like, I won't tell you that a microtransaction is worth it, but I don't think it is. But
So I've actually caught some wind about this story for the past week, and this was reported by PCGamer.com by Stephen Messner. For Honor players did the math on his microtransactions and aren't happy about it. For Honor had an easy ride since launching about a month ago, between persistent connection problems, bugs that were never fixed from beta, and lively arguments over what constitutes fair play. Enjoying Ubisoft's refreshing take on fighting games is an uphill battle. Now there's a new reason for fans to be up in arms. For Honor's microtransactions are it's really expensive. Coming off the heels.
Over $700.
Yes. According to the heels of new emotes costing 7,000 steel in in-game currency, this can be bought in chunks of 5,000 for $4.99. Players have done the math on how long it would take to grind out every unlockable and aren't happy with the results. And then it crunches numbers as far as like what exactly that would entail. And I'll just give you the brief here. Here's the gist. Each hero in For Honor takes 5,000 steel to unlock all the customizations included in the base game. Since there's currently 12 heroes available, that means to unlock everything in For Honor, you need 1,098,000 steel that is apart from the 7.32 of the $100 steel packs, so Ubisoft has valued their in-game unlocks within the base game at a $732 overcharge of the original $60 to $100 spent on the game. And I'll post this link. It goes into some deep details about this, but what do you think about this one? Like
these are a perfect example of, pardon the French, bullshit microtransactions. I think that when I defend microtransactions, I defend the idea that they do not affect the game. And there are objects in this game that could have been that. However, that's not the case. There are weapons and armor that you can get in this game that make you stronger. Period. Mm-hmm. And those are not unlockable unless you spend just a ridiculously large amount of time or you pay over $700 for it.
Yeah.
That is bullshit. And then the worst part about it is the... I don't remember who defended it from the company itself, but...
Oh, I heard about this, yeah.
Yeah, he defended it by saying, well, if you play League of Legends, you don't unlock everything, yada, yada, yada. Or he was talking about other games, and he was just saying, like, in this game, you don't unlock everything. Someone's like, why would you build your economy, your within-game economy, to fit those types of games? And he used, like, free-to-play games as an example. If a free-to-play game has $700 worth of unlockable items and you have to either spend $700 or, you know, 7 years, that makes more sense because it's a free-to-play game.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't make sense.
This is a full-price game. This is a full-price game. $60 game.
It was a really... this is an example of bullshit microtransactions. Now, like I said, if the microtransactions were just like colors or like...
Yes. Yes.
Or if the armor didn't matter, if the weapons didn't matter, they were just cool,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't be a problem. But they do matter.
Yeah,
if you play the game, you know they matter.
Yeah, this is where microtransactions can be... This is what some gamers feared about for the longest time when they were first introduced, as far as like having these price walls for content that's literally in the game. And this is something that... we can point to is like, this is exactly how you do it wrong. Like, this is not the way you do it. You're literally cutting off ways for a player to progress in a game by putting it on a price wall.
I've talked about numerous times about how we pay less for games now than we ever have because Congress passed a law a long time ago saying that our digital media, video games is basically what I'm talking about,
yeah.
They cannot go above a certain paywall. And that paywall is 60. 100%. That's like, when a company goes, well, we're going to put out a $70 version, they have to say, like, because it has DLC, or it has extra content. And that's how they get away with that. Otherwise, they can't. They cannot get above that $60 paywall. But games cost way more to make than that. And, there has to be a way for those companies to make money back. There has to be. Rooster Teeth on The Know, the channel The Know, put out like an 11-minute video about this. And it says exactly everything that I've been saying for like a year and a half to 2 years. So as gamers, as people who want to play games, you have two options. Deal with microtransactions... Or be willing to pay $100 for a standalone game.
Yeah, and also on top of that, like, I was gonna say, I think gamers now, they're tolerant of microtransactions now than they were back then. There's still people who still gripe and moan about it, but like, well, for the most part, like me and like a bunch of others are more like. We know that microtransactions will be in some games, and it's there, as long as it does not affect the content of the game. It's like, if it's purely cosmetic, or it's purely just does not affect the game as...
Well, like, take Mass Effect Andromeda, for example. There's microtransactions, and it's totally for items that you could make you stronger. Well, higher based weapons, stronger armor, higher class characters. But here's the fun factor about Mass Effect Andromeda. There is no versus mode.
They have a multiplayer.
It's not versus.
Is it not?
I thought it was. It's wave-based.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
Yeah, it's four players versus AI. So who cares at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, nobody's complaining about it because of that reason.
Mm-hmm.
At least I haven't heard much complaining because when it comes to the Mass Effect Andromeda, blah, blah, blah. We'll get to that later. Or Overwatch for that, for another example. Like, everything in Overwatch is, like, nothing affects the core gameplay at all. So, like, nobody complains about that too much. I've heard a little bit, but not too much. It's also, like, a great way to keep a game that, like, developers want the game to last longer on the market. That's a great way to support that.
Right, right.
I'm trying to think of another example that's not those two that works in that category.
So I'll give an example. So, okay, I believe it was Dead Space 3, I want to say. Might have been... No, it was 3. It was 3. There were some in-game items that you can usually earn by just discovering them in the game. But they gave you an option to, like, microtransactions to buy, said item to boost up your... your character, get your character a bit more stronger now than later on. Those things that I think are fine because, like, there's still ways to earn those in game and not preventing you not to do so. Like here, like, you can still earn those armor, but it's gonna take you a crap ton of hours and absurd amount of time to get it.
Right, and that's more so, like, I think the linchpin right there is, like, the stuff in For Honor affects the game.
Yeah, like, that's the big thing, because it's a versus game. Like, that's a huge thing in this. Yeah. So.
So I don't know. I can't defend For Honor. There's no defending For Honor in this category. If it was just cosmetic, if it made, like, armor glowy or what the hell ever, I don't care. It wouldn't be a big issue, but it's a big issue, and it's not gonna work. Like, I get it, Ubisoft, I get it. It costs a lot of money to make games. I mean, if we can get into that conversation later about Mass Effect, I can also kind of go into that because it rolls into that. You have to do it right. You have to do it to an extent that doesn't make the gamer feel like, well, if I don't have money or time, I can't play this game.
Exactly.
You cannot do that.
Exactly, exactly. Speaking of Mass Effect, you've been playing the game for the past week, I would say.
I just put just under 17 hours into it.
So, okay. So... we want to check in with you regarding your play with Mass Effect. Like, what do you think of the game so far? Like, what do you think so far?
So, a lot of people have been critiquing the beginning of it as starting slow. And I think that those people either, A, don't remember what it's like to play a Mass Effect game, or just weren't expecting, 75% dialogue, 25% action, or even less on that action percentage. Because when I started playing the game, I played it for 5 hours when I put it in, mm-hmm. and I shot things for about a solid hour, mm-hmm. of that five. So,
keep going.
Yeah, I know. And the game, like, the storyline's really good. I really enjoy what they're doing with the plot. I think it's very fun. But there have been a few like graphical hiccups here and there. Like, sometimes when I'm driving the Nomad across, like, a huge area,
mm-hmm.
It'll, like, the whole game will, like, load in a next, like, the next place that I'm about to go to. Mm-hmm. And so the whole game, like, hiccups real hard. Other than that, it's not too much. I did have, like, a weird... like, I was talking to two characters, and one of the characters, like, model got stuck in T-pose. Well, but here's the weird part. Like, his character got stuck in T-pose, but a copy of him was still in cutscene. So it was like he was standing inside his own T-Pose character. And that's a graphical glitch that I've seen happen to a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's actually a reason why the game has like pseudo bad animation and graphical glitches like that. Which I can get into if you want me to.
Let's see. Well, you can for a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Briefly, I'll try to make it as brief as I can. So one of the, an ex BioWare animator came forth and talked about this. He's also worked on with Naughty Dog on the fourth Uncharted game, and he explains that the way that a game like Mass Effect has to work, and Bethesda too for that matter, you have to make base animations that run in correlation with the other development team. So a game like Uncharted or any other linear-based game, you're able to take time with the cutscenes. You're able to take your, like extended periods of time because they aren't based on decisions. They aren't based on numerous trees that the character can talk. When a game like Mass Effect or a BioWare game, a Bethesda game, you have just tons and tons of dialogue. You can't make everything fit into this nice house without sacrificing something. Now, given BioWare another $40 million and another year, it might have looked better. But that's not the case here. EA wanted the game out now, and the game came out now. And is it totally distracting? No, it's not. It's... If you're that distracted by puppets talking, then I don't know what else to tell you. There are like it's noticeable. I notice it, and I'm a fan. I'm a defender of Mass Effect. But it's nothing. It's nothing that bad. It's nothing to the extent of like, well, I'm gonna knock this game down like 80 points because of bad animation on human faces.
What I will say about it is that the thing from, because like Mass Effect has always been having, at least when it comes to the original series, like it was a great story, and like depending on how you play, but like for me, like I often talk to my crewmates, I often talk to a lot of people because the conversations are always fun to always fun to have this conversation and talk and just learn about the story and the character. When that's kind of your main thing in Mass Effect, and like you see those animations kind of be weird or the way they're animated just not correctly, it kind of takes you out a little bit.
Sure. But I think also on that note, like, I mean, this is a whole another conversation too.
Yeah.
But what exactly is immersion? Because I've never been in a situation in my life where I'm holding a controller and I get so lost in the game that I lose time. Like, it, for me to get to that point, it has to be something that I'm really, really into, and I've never been into something that much to where that's a problem. Like today, for example, I played it for 2 hours. I meant to play it for an hour. The reason I went an extra hour is because I really wanted to finish up a mission. I didn't want to come back to it, and that took me an extra hour to finish. I just think that, like, the story is so much fun. The idea of the stories, the theming in the story, too, is a lot of fun. Something that Mass Effect 1 never hit on, or the original trilogy never hit on. But, like, even when it comes to story, I'm seeing a lot of criticism that doesn't make any sense to me. For example, something that drives me nuts about people playing Mass Effect as a whole, or just stories in general, Ross from Game Grumps, he tweeted out this problem that he had about in the original Mass Effect games, you would use mass relays to get across the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah.
In this game, you're in the Andromeda galaxy, and yet they're able to travel from system to system without any problem and with no mass relays. Mm-hmm. He had to be pointed out to him that we're not in the whole galaxy. We're in a cluster. And within a cluster, we can travel from star system to star system, well, solar system to solar system, without mass relays. To travel to another cluster on the other side of the Andromeda Galaxy, we need a mass relay, but that's not what we're doing here. That's not what this game is. And when he was like, oh, I guess we're in just a cluster, the game made it very confusing. And I wanted to scream in his face, the game tells you this right in the beginning. Had you been paying attention and not put going on Twitter saying, man, the beginning of this game is slow, you would have picked that up. But instead, you didn't. That, right there, is my biggest problem with the people who play Mass Effect and are judging it unfairly. My biggest problem with people in Mass Effect 3, just not paying attention to the dialogue given, not paying attention to the story, and then judging it on their not paying attention.
So, I was going to say, aside from the problems it has and people playing the game, you are still having a lot of fun with the game, right?
I'm having a blast. I'll spend just like today I spent almost 2 hours just on the main hub, which is essentially kind of like the Citadel in the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
The combat is neat. It plays a little bit more like Uncharted, where you lock into cover automatically, right. And just by pressing back you get out of cover. There are really, really fun story elements that, like yesterday, I hit like a huge like piece of it. Mm-hmm. Essentially, the equivalent to this in like Mass Effect 1 would have been the choice between saving Ashley or Caden.
Oh, nice.
And it was, I had to take like a solid like 2 to 3 minutes to think about what I wanted to do.
Yeah. I remember that moment for me too, like when I played Mass Effect 1, like that moment between Ashley and Caden. Like I put the controller down, I went outside, just like thought about it for like a good couple minutes before I made my decision. It's totally awesome.
It was definitely like, and for like other parts of the game after that, I've been having to deal with the repercussions.
Yeah.
But my mind reels, and this is the point that I get about what was the word I used? Immersed into the game.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm playing it and I'm trying to figure out where to go next and doing side missions, I'm going, I wonder what conversations would have been like had I chosen the other option. Like, I start to think about that as I'm playing it, like thinking about the other branches and, you know, I'm romancing one character. What if I started flirting with somebody else? Like, would that character notice? I'm thinking about those things. I'm not thinking about, man, it's tough being a Pathfinder. Like, I don't do that. I don't know who does. It's such a weird concept to me to sit there and be like, well, I'm going to choose options that I would choose. Like, you're not playing a tabletop RPG where that, and even if you are, you're playing a character. You're not playing yourself. That's such a weird concept to me that people don't quite get. Like, if you're playing a character, you should be choosing what that character's doing, not what you would do, right?
Well,
that's just my concept on it.
It's to each your own. Like, I when I played Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3, like, I just played myself. Like, I like the fact that I want to put myself in the game, so I actually modeled myself in the game as close as I can. And, like, I would, like, choose stuff like, what I do in this situation, you know? And I'll just kind of go off of there. But, you know, to each your own when it comes to that. But it sounds like you're still having fun in the game. Like, I haven't bought the game yet.
It's a blast.
Will definitely get it when I can. I just got paid too, so.
Oh, and to keep I hit a moment of a little bit of overwhelmingness. I hit a planet side, and I didn't realize I was picking up a shit ton of missions for that planet.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, it was like, hey, there are seriously like 10 to 15 missions I couldn't count that are on this map, and the map size, just so you know, mm-hmm. is roughly the size of a small city.
Oh, okay.
You're like, oh, okay. Oh, cool. God.
That's awesome. All right. So now we move on to our topic of tonight.
I thought we were going to do the other thing.
Well, I mean, we have a half hour, unless you want to go overtime.
Our main topic might not go that long. Plus, it'll only take me a few minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, then, if that's the case, then I'll let you do your thing then. So, give me a second here as I type it out. Was it? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a new segment in the show. It is called Overwatch News with Greg, because he loves him some Overwatch.
And we never talk about Overwatch on the podcast, and I always want to because there's always something happening within the community or with Overwatch as a whole, and I think it's really cool. So a few things right off the bat. Overwatch this week got a new character. The hero is now live and no longer on the PTR, Orisa. I'm sure that everyone's heard about her because there's been a lot of stuff going on over the past month. But I've got a chance to play her, and she's fantastic. She's a great anchor to a team. I think that she can get murdered pretty quickly if you don't have the right team comp. Something that my friends and I have been doing a lot is Reinhardt, Orisa, and Mercy combo. And that's a lot of fun. I really, really enjoy that. Other news is that Jeff Kaplan was on the forums today talking about that there's a lot of skins that are coming out this year that he thinks everyone's going to really enjoy, so I'm really looking forward to that. They're supposed to be adding no gravity as an option in the custom games on the custom games browser. So if that's something that interests you about playing Overwatch with low gravity, which it does me, that sounds like a lot of fun. Definitely want to check that out. And there was one other thing, and I don't remember what it was exactly, but, oh, that's what it was. King Dro got a lighting adjustment, the map which takes place in London. They felt like it was a little too dark, a little too doom and gloom, so they brightened it up quite a bit. A lot of hallways and whatnot are just brighter and, but slight adjustment. I think that's really good. I know that Lucio's getting a reworking, and I think McCree is supposed to get a reworking here soon. Lucio's reworking definitely makes him more fun to play and less like of a must pick on every comp team, or competitive team, I should say. So that's going to be interesting to see how that works, since he was kind of my go-to character every time because I play support mainly. I'm really looking forward to Tuesday, when we can bring Orisa into competitive and actually see how well she does with certain players and certain team comps, and have a lot of fun with that. So that's been your Overwatch Minute with Greg.
I should definitely just make a little video thing for you, so every time we cut to you about this, it's Overwatch News with Greg!
Oh, every week it'll be a thing.
Yeah, I should work on that. Yeah. I might be able to do it, actually. Yeah, that sounds good. All right, well, thank you, Greg, for the Overwatch Minute for today.
No problem.
Now we can move on to our main topic of tonight's discussion. And this topic was kind of brought on because we had this discussion over Twitter, which is I just hit my own microphone.
Good job.
Glad nobody saw that. So we had this conversation on Twitter the other day, which was, you know, kind of a bad place to have conversations sometimes. But one of the things that was tweeted out, or, you know, that was potentially leaked, was that there's going to be a new Call of Duty game, not a surprise, by Sledgehammer Games for 2017, or just going to be revealed at E3. And that game was a poster of like a classic World War II battle scene, literally in the title, Call of Duty WW2. Whether this may be the case or not, we don't know exactly, but it's pointing towards possibly, yes, it's happening. And Greg, you brought up the idea or the point that, you know, do we really need to go back and punch Nazis again for the 100th time?
I think, for me, there's the fact that, like, I'm just tired of World War II games. Right. We had so many of them back in, like, the PS2 and the early Xbox days that I'm tired of it. And that's a personal thing. It's my same thing about, like, zombie games. I'm just tired of zombie games. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like going back and playing World War II again, or like, even World War One, for that example, and there was a lot of jokes about that, it kind of takes away the impact that those wars had. Now, granted, it's history, and history can be kind of boring, even if it is a war. There's a lot of like important themes and ideas and stuff that happened during World War I and World War II. And I feel like playing a multiplayer game within that time setting takes away that impact.
Well, it does. You become a super soldier. You become Superman for that matter, because you're a one-man army most of the time. What I'm kind of getting at, and kind of something we talked about on Twitter, is just, you know, when an idea is overused, or when something that, you know, that we had a lot back then, like, when is it really a good idea to bring it back? And
there's that too.
And the thing for me is that, and I said to this podcast, like, I'm pretty excited for if a World War II shooter is back with Call of Duty, because we had a classic World War II shooter in a long time. We had a World War I shooter with Battlefield, and that proved to be very popular and very very successful in sales and people playing it. Especially the way it was told too through the stories, which are freaking awesome. There's definitely a point where if you, and it's a trend in the game industry, if you use one idea that worked with this game, it will possibly end up being used over and over again through other games. So they can cash in on that idea too for their games. And, you know, example, World War II shooters, zombies, ton of them. And I want to say another one I can try and think of, like, maybe... I want to say, like, there was a time where, like, everything was sandbox. It was like a sandbox game. I think there was, actually. Yeah, not thinking about it. Kind
of
now.
I think oversaturation is a huge aspect to being tired of something. I know a lot of people who are getting real tired of superhero movies. And I totally, I'm 100% behind that idea of getting tired of something. If you are the type of audience that does not care about it, because there's too much of it, then absolutely, like, you're not going to be interested in it.
Yeah.
Do I think that that's an inherent problem? It can be. I think for this situation, the market seemed to understand that World War II was kind of overplayed and overdone, mm-hmm. and moved away from it. But now there seems to be a resurgence of people that are like, oh, I'd love to go back.
Yeah.
And I think that in a weird way, World War II video games hit a nostalgia nerve.
Which is weird to say.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I'm saying it out loud right now in this weird, like, slow, marauding context. Because it's like going, you know, I got over cancer when I was a kid. But, oh, the nostalgia of being in a hospital. It's that weird concept, right? Like,
oh, man.
It's not the exact same. The analogy's not great.
I get what you're saying, though. Here's the thing, though. It's like, if you played games in the game industry, or to kind of have a know-how of how the game industry works, it goes by trends. And when you have one trend that goes on forever and then goes away for a while, you know, when you do another trend that is happening right now, that old trend that you didn't like back then, if you bring that trend back, people are going to be actually more excited about it because it's a new thing. Like right now, the trend I see is that there's a lot of sci-fi, a lot of space games as of late, in the past year and a half. But it has been broken up other games as well, indie games and whatnot. But to me, it feels like there's a little bit of a bit more of the sci-fi genre.
I think for me, like, you're making a good point. Like, I think the problem isn't that the genre itself, if you want to call it a genre.
Yeah, because you can use genre, I'm sure.
No, because genre is shooter. Like, World War II isn't a genre. Setting?
Yeah, setting.
An idea? Whatever.
Yeah.
I think when an idea is overused is when you start to see less and less originality from that idea.
Yeah, that's true.
So if we could see a World War II game that took a spin and added, I don't know, sci-fi elements, that'd be neat. I'd play that. It wouldn't even feel like a World War II game at that point.
I feel like that happened before, but
it kind of has. It absolutely has. But my point is it hasn't happened to the point of oversaturation.
Right. Yeah.
Like, yes, sci-fi games, absolutely. And I think that, like, for me, what makes Mass Effect stand out from other sci-fi games is the fact that it is less about space exploration and more about, like, that personal interaction with characters, you know? Like, that's what really is cool about it to me. But, I mean, other games have that.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with, like, multiple things of the same thing coming out.
Yeah.
Like, zombies, for example. I feel like zombies became an oversaturation because two things. There was a bunch of games that were just adding it to their game.
Yeah.
Just making it a part of the game. I was like, that's weird.
Yeah.
But also, like, we were just seeing a lot of it at one time and nothing super original.
Yeah.
I think Left 4 Dead was, like, the most original zombie thing that we had seen. And,
It was Left 4 Dead, and it was also the zombie mode in Call of Duty, which that
mode in Call of Duty is what really sparked it. I feel like.
Yeah.
Because then every game was just adding it. Like, I remember Red Dead Revolver had it. Or, I'm sorry, Red Dead Redemption had it.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a DLC, and actually, that was actually pretty.
It was good. Yeah. It was good, but it was still weird, man. Like, it was still like kind of like why is this here? But I get why people were adding it to their games. Like, if something's popular enough, you kind of want to push it in. You want to add to it. I think Left 4 Dead, or not Left 4 Dead, but Last of Us was definitely a zombie game that didn't, like, it turned the zombie genre on its head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. Like, I think for me, World War II is definitely overused. To go back to the subject, I think World War II is definitely overused for me because the first four Call of Duties were World War II.
Yeah.
The first two Medal of Honor, no, first three Medal of Honor games were World War II.
Yeah.
They even went back to World War II for Call of Duty called World at War.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm forgetting some World War II games.
There's definitely a lot. Like, I remember playing Big Red 1 for the original Xbox. That was That was a World War II shooter. What was that game? That was actually a good game though. It was Brothers in Arms. Brothers in Arms was actually a great game, but like that was also another World War II shooter. Although it was a third person World War II shooter, so I'm gonna count that in there.
It still counts as a World War II shooter.
Yeah.
Also, I got a little cold.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Let's see. What did Josh say in the chat? Kind of off topic, but a few years back, they did a Transformers vs. J. Joe comics in World War II. And it focused on the result of the humans gaining access to Cybertronian tech and how it changed the direction of the war. And I know, I understand why you are adding that, Josh, to like that whole bringing a spin to the World War II genre, and I think that's 100% where I'm thinking, where I'm going with this, with like how to change it or spin it.
So
a squad tactics game. Okay.
Yeah.
Like my friends and I, who play video games all the time, like multiplayer games, I should say, we get really, really bored with just standard shooters. Like, to us, Halo 5 was one of the worst multiplayer games we had ever played. Is it a bad multiplayer? No. Is it a boring multiplayer? God, yes. Now, why is it a bad multiplayer? Because we've done it. We've been there. I've talked to you about wanting Quake again. Quake's coming back, and you're super excited for it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not. And I'm not excited for it because I've played it. I've been there. Why are we rehashing? Why?
It's new. There's new
but
stuff.
But it's not new. It's not new, Anthony.
Yes, there is. There's new characters. The Who characters cares? Have not been in Quake.
Who cares if it's new characters? If the gameplay hasn't changed, then it's not new.
I mean, you can argue that a lot for a lot of other games that have not changed yet are pretty, pretty popular.
I'm not saying wanting to go back and relive something is a bad thing. I'm not saying that because, dear God, I want to play the remaster of Bulletstorm. But I'm also saying that I recognize that Bulletstorm is not original, and that Bulletstorm is just hitting my nostalgia nerve. I totally recognize that and understand that. And Bulletstorm will be a rental. It won't even be a buy because I don't want to support that mentality. To me, I put my money towards things that are decently original. And I say decently because, again, yes, I did spend my money on Power Rangers this last week, or this weekend. So
yeah, same here.
And that's not, I mean, they did make it original-esque. Like, they did take the assets and just kind of turn them on its head. Mm-hmm. But also, Power Rangers never went away. I don't know. I guess my point about, like, the World War II games is they were overused in the past, and thanks to Modern Warfare, that shifted. The idea of what a war game should or shouldn't be definitely shifted, thanks to Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, Twitch reaction shooters, CSGO definitely took that away from Quake. I feel personally they did. When it come to hero shooters, you know, Team Fortress is definitely on the scene, but now Overwatch is king.
Yep.
And I think that, like, when wanting to rehash the past, that's another thing, Anthony. That's another question I have. What from World War II can they do again? How many times do I have to see Batman's parents die before we all get it?
Well, I mean,
and I use that in terms of storming Normandy.
Well, here's the thing: it's like, at this point, yes, you're right. There's nothing left you can actually tell, as far as what exactly in World War II, unless there's some other hidden war or skirmish that happened that we don't know about, that, you know, was in history books or somebody has knowledge of. But what I will say is, I think people are not going to get tired of that story, as weird as it sounds. I think that people are going, because if one thing, I don't know, one positive thing to take away from this is the fact that, yeah, you are learning some history of what happened during that time, and constantly is reminded of what happened in World War II. And I think that companies will probably retell the same story over and over again, or find some other war that happened or that was during the time of World War II. It's going to happen. It's almost the same thing as, like, movies. Do we need to see a reboot of certain movies that are out there, like Power Rangers? No. But it's going to happen anyways. Like,
I don't think I'm going with a need. I think my argument is just, like, with Power Rangers, it felt a bit different. With Power, like, if we had one or two World War II games, Anthony, mm-hmm. it would make I wouldn't even probably we wouldn't even have this conversation.
Yeah.
But again, like, the World War II theming is absolutely overdone. And it still feels overdone to this day.
It's been a while. It's been a while since we had a World War II shooter. A good one.
It has been a while since we've had a World War II shooter. But we had, like, eight of them. Back to back to back to back to back. For a while.
Yeah, we did.
I just can't see me wanting to shoot Nazis in the face again unless it's, like... And even then, I wouldn't want to... Like, I'm tired of shooting Nazis in the face. Plain and simple. I'm tired of shooting them in Wolfenstein. I'm tired of shooting them in World War II games. I'm tired of shooting them in modern days. I don't want to shoot Nazis anymore. Like, I played Mafia 3, and I don't mind shooting racists in the face, but I don't want to shoot Nazis anymore. As a matter of fact, I love shooting racists in the face of Mafia.
And, you know, to each their own, like, you know, when it comes to, like, what their preference to games, and, like, you know, maybe a certain genre or an idea that was out for so long that, you know, left a bad taste in your mouth, and for good reason. And I think that companies finally recognize that after a while, and that's why there's no more World War II shooters, like, as often, or none at all. Because
I also very strongly feel like, Anthony, that in that regard, we've hit an apex in our culture, and you might agree with this, where we're not having originality thrown down our throats anymore. We're having remakes and sequels and rehashes and adaptations thrown down our throats stronger than ever. Mm-hmm. It's rare. It's very rare that we get original content. like, yes, Mass Effect Andromeda is original content in story and characters and things like that, but it's Mass Effect. It's a well-known franchise. And
no, keep going. I want to say something.
I was trying to think of like where to go with that further, because I can't really think of where to go with that further. Like, this past 3 months of 2017, I've really only like paid attention to things that are already part of franchises. Like Overwatch. Overwatch is still the only original thing that I've put any time into. And when I like a fully original thing, you know. Mm.
But I would argue, to counterpoint, there are original ideas, but they're coming from the indie scene. Like, they have a lot of ideas that are.
That's my point. Like people always go like, why isn't Hollywood taking any chances? And I was like, well, they're not throwing the money at the things that they don't think can possibly make money. So indie developers are making this original content. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. There's one thing I want to point out from the chat that I think Butters put a good point. He said, if you have to take into account it has been a long enough stretch of time that there is a whole new generation of gamers that were not playing games from that big cluster F of World War II games. To you and me, yes, it's overdone. To others, it's new. We are not the primary demographic anymore.
And I'm not – and you are 100% right, Butters. Like, and I've pointed that out in numerous conversations Anthony and I have had in the past as well, that – my nephews have never played a World War II game.
Mm-hmm.
Never. And they'll get to with this because their dad plays Call of Duty, and they love Call of Duty, so they'll definitely play World War II. Mm-hmm. But here's my question. Now, having played games that take place in the future, that have like futuristic cool weapons, that have drone strikes and remote control vehicles and just rad stuff like that and running on walls, will my nephews be able to downgrade and go back to 1942? Will the generation that this demographic is for want to do that?
I mean, depending on how it's used. I mean, like, we're in the age where VR is much more of a thing and could be used for educational purposes, but I get your point.
I don't think that kids today want to be educated when they want to be entertained by a video game, because let's be honest, did we?
I mean, I played some educational games on a computer. I forgot what it was called. Number Munchers, I think it was called. where it was a game when you how I learned math. Same thing for.
But words. if I handed you Number Munchers or Pokemon, what would you play?
Right now.
You play Pokemon. You know, when you were a kid.
Oh, when I was a kid. Oh. Pokemon.
Pokemon. It's Pokemon. It's not.
Yeah, look. I love Number Munchers, man. When I was a kid, I loved that game. I don't care what he says. It was that in Oregon Trail. but I get your point though, for sure.
And I'm not talking about individuals as much, Butters. And you're right about that. It depends on the person.
Yeah.
But I truly feel that as a generation, as a whole group of consumers, I just don't think. I don't think World War II will be as popular as it was when we were playing on the PS1 and PS2.
Now,
well, technically just PS2. I don't think there was a World War II game on the PS1.
Right. But I will say, just before we close it out, the one idea, or the one kind of, I won't say counter-argument, or just kind of like as far as like how an idea is overused but people still love it, is Mario. Mario has been a game. Mario's been a has been a franchise. Has been around for a very long time. We have a new Mario every other year, and
not even every other year. The last primary Mario game was Mario World, and that came out 3 years ago.
Yeah,
Super Mario World. Let me look that up real quick.
Okay, but yeah, like that's a franchise, and that is a game where it has literally been around since the 1980s, and people still love to play Mario, and that game has. It literally is the same story for the most part. There's definitely some Mario games they take the story in different routes, or they have a different setting for Mario, but the constant is always there. You're Mario. You're there to solve a problem or save somebody.
Sure, but let me kind of explain to you why Mario has stayed relevant and not oversaturated over the course of years.
All right.
The first Mario game, it was a side-scrolling platform. And the second one was a side-scrolling platform.
Mm-hmm.
The third game, a 3D platformer. Adding the 3D element changed it entirely. Brought a whole new birth, like, just wealth to the fucking franchise. Mm-hmm. The fourth game, they gave him a goddamn jetpack and water. Mm-hmm. That was drastically different from anything we'd played. Granted, it's still a platformer, but it wasn't a traditional platformer. Mm-hmm. It was a new element. And then the fifth and sixth games were Galaxy 1 and 2. But if you notice, the next game was not that. The next game was New Super Mario Brothers, and New Super Mario Brothers was lampooned for being too much like the original, trying to really nail in that nostalgia market. And the kids that had played Galaxy, the kids who that had already like kind of got used to 3D Mario or the new Mario, didn't care as much for New Super Mario World or New Super Mario Brothers. The market share totally explains that, like just in general. And then they were like, okay, let's take the idea we did on the DS with Super Mario Land, Super Mario 3D Land, and do that in a full-fledged form with Super Mario 3D World. And that sold like goddamn hotcakes. Like, that sold really, really well because that... It kind of hit the nostalgia mark, but still had that 3D aspect, and that's and people really enjoy that. I gotta get my hands off this damn table and stop shaking my camera. And to keep that in mind... Each of those games came out so far apart from one another that it didn't stagnate the market. It didn't become like, if you have pizza every day for a month, you're going to get tired of pizza.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you have like pizza every day for a month, you're going to get tired of pizza. Like if you have chocolate every day of your month, you're gonna hate chocolate. Like it's the reason why I don't eat at my job, because I know that I would get bored of it pretty quickly.
When I was around 10 to 11 years old, my mom was disabled and because she had a carpal tunnel, my dad was living 3 hours away. We didn't have a whole lot of food. There was just not enough money coming to the house, so we had to go to a food closet. The food closet had a lot of hot dogs and top ramen. Guess what I'm not interested in at all as an adult?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Too much of a good thing can definitely wear on you. Especially if it's a game. Or a certain, and that, and just to add on, just to before we close it out, as I said before, you can only go so much off of what history has for you. At some point, you may have to make some original ideas in that time era if you want to dive into it.
I think, Anthony, the Vietnam War, the Korean War, the Cold War are definitely wars that you could take from that would be fun and different enough to go back to the past. Got to get back, Samurai Jack.
I think that's the proper way to end it. Actually, I'm not gonna say anything else. That was too good. Thank you for watching, guys. This has been Mission Star Podcast. We are live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Pacific time on this Twitch channel. We talk about games of all sorts, and new topics of the game industry that we get into. Before we go, Greg, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at ChubRockGeek, and you can tell me how wrong I am on my opinion. Feel free to. We can have a discussion via Twitter. You can follow me on Snapchat at ChubRockSnap. You can follow me streaming every Saturday on twitch.tv/halfemptyetank. Which I think they're currently still live. They were playing Tabletop Simulator.
Oh, okay. So the minute this ends, the auto host is going to go to them then probably.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But yeah, I stream every Saturday on that channel. I thought about doing this, and I guess I'll just say it out loud. If you have an Xbox One and you want to follow me on Xbox One at ChubRuckGeek, just search for ChubRuckGeek. I do take like clips of my gameplay things that I'm doing. If there's something funny or kind of outstanding that I think I want to share, I do that way. I wish there was a way that could just go straight to my Twitter. That'd be awesome, but I don't think that's a possibility yet. So yeah, if you want to follow me on Xbox and you have that, go right ahead. I think that's about it. I'm working on a review for Master Blaster Zero still. I've been lazy because of Mass Effect.
Oh, well, yeah, that's obvious. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You can follow me on Twitter at Defect of Naruto. You can follow the work that we do at MissionStartPodcast.com. The second here is I bring up the end slide, which I need to update, actually, honestly. So, if you enjoyed this podcast, if you enjoy watching tonight's shenanigans on this Twitch channel, we upload this on our website on Tuesdays and on our podcast feeds. Just look up Mission Star Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Goes live usually around noon or afternoonish, you definitely get the audio version of this podcast. We're also on YouTube. The link's below. Want to check it out? Also we host a podcast. We talk about conventions of all kind, anime, video game, comic books, whatever. We give our thoughts. We give our opinions. We also give advice for people who are going to conventions that may be new to said convention. Check out the Conover, which is on iTunes and Stitcher, as well as also on our website in the podcast section of our website. And last but not least, check out the Rolling 20s. They are a comic book. They are entertainment, movies, video games, kind of everything in one podcast, hosted by Jeremy Wilson on the site. And it's also on iTunes, Stitcher, and in our website in the podcast section of our website. Usually up by every Friday. Usually up on Fridays. I digress. One other note, we are hosting another podcast, movie podcast, on Tuesday this week, which will be me, Greg, and Derek. We're talking about Power Rangers, because we've all seen it, and we're going to talk about it on Tuesday at 8 p.m. on our Facebook channel. Facebook page. Sorry.
You got that there, Porky?
And you can, if you want to check it out, the Facebook link is below this video stream as you're watching. Also, one other note before we end the show. We have our own Twitch server. I set one up when it launched the desktop app. And click on the link below. If you click on it, join on it, you get able to watch this and also chat at the same time with other people and other stuff that we can do in that Twitch, new app that they are launching. So, yeah. Anyways, that's it. That's gonna do it for us. I need to go eat. So, with that being said, thank you for watching, and we will see you guys all next time.